This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here live from the MVP Studios of Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Google Trends expert Justin Burr is going to join me to break down the top five search trends on Google this week. Thanks for joining me, Justin.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, what we get for number five?
Toys R Us. And I feel like we were just talking about them because they were closing all their stores and filing for bankruptcy. Well, they're back, baby. They've teamed up with Target. They're going to relaunch the website. They've got a True Kids Brands is their parent company, and they're relaunching it, which is crazy because last year in October, they filed for bankruptcy, and they amassed like $5 billion in debt. But yeah, they're coming back, and they partnered with Target. They've got the stuff. They're going to kind of rejigger the brand and the business a little bit. But Toys R Us has been around for 71 years, which is insane. But as I just mentioned, they amassed $5 billion in debt over those 71 years from just having really low prices and like signing these exclusive licensing deals. So it's crazy. They're also going to open up two new stores. So they're not just going to have an online presence. They're actually going to open up two brick-and-mortar stores, one in Texas and one in New Jersey, and then maybe do 10 more by the end of 2020. So I don't know. If it didn't work the first time in the first 71 years, I don't know what the heck they're going to do. I also have realized that I don't know what bankruptcy really is because they're just back. So I don't know. I'm stoked. I love Toys R Us, so good on them.
That made me laugh. You're right, because I'm so confused. Like, wait, I thought when you went did bankruptcy, you're gone forever. Apparently not in the business world. You can just jump back up like a zombie, right?
Yeah, it's just a way for you to be like, hey, I'm actually not going to pay you back, so I'm bankrupt, but I'm just going to continue to do my... Because we were just talking about this with Forever 21 a couple weeks ago. Like, they filed for bankruptcy, but they didn't have to close all their stores, so I don't know. That's a topic for another discussion.
Oh, what's weird, does that mean that Target owns Toys R Us, or are they just collaborating together and they're fulfilling their orders? I'm confused.
Yeah, that's a good cue. It seems as though it's just a partnership. They don't own it. But it says shoppers on the Toys R Us website will complete their purchases on Target.com, and the toys can be delivered or picked up in Target stores. So it's like a pretty ingrained partnership of sorts, but it's not an ownership as far as I can tell. Oh, also one thing before we move on. This is pretty funny. So we're looking at the most searched toy how-tos in the United States on Google, and how to disinfect toys is number one, which is interesting. Like, toys are probably so disgusting, I've never really thought to, like, disinfect them.
I usually just take, like, a baby wipe and just wipe it down. I mean, kids are going to get it dirty again, so I never really... I mean, do you put it in bleach?
Totally.
No, you can't put it in bleach.
Put it in bleach? Let it, like, melt it.
Well, diluted. How's that? Like a cap full of bleach? Isn't that supposed to just kill some things, not the entire toy?
Yeah, Jimmy, go put your toys in bleach before you play with them. And then all of a sudden your kid is like blind.
Poor Jimmy.
Poor Jimmy. Didn't see it coming.
What we get for number four?
We've got the snakehead fish. And it's scary and spooky. It's this invasive species that was just found in Gwinnett County, Georgia. And it's this, like, carnivorous snake of sorts that was native to some basin in China. And it's been located in 15 states in the United States, but it's, like, super invasive. So anytime that it's found, it's, like, a big issue for the ecological systems there. So it's the first time that it's been in Georgia. And people are kind of freaking out because not only do they look terrifying, they have, like, giant teeth, and they can live on land for, like, multiple days because they can just breathe the oxygen out on the land. But it's also invasive, and it can eat all the stuff in the lake and the rivers and stuff. So officials are saying if you find one and you're in Georgia, kill it immediately and then put it on ice, take photos of it, and notify your local fishery office. But begs the question, what's wrong with having a species that just dominates? You know, like, the snakefish head, they don't think that they're invasive, quote-unquote, or doing anything wrong. They're just trying to be out there, live their life, eat some stuff, And now all of a sudden, all the residents of the county are just instructed to kill them. It's kind of a bummer for the snakehead fish.
You know what I think of? I think of the hogs in Texas. Like,
they're the feral hogs.
They do. They have a problem with, like, the hogs. So it's year-round hunting on the hogs because it's an invasive species. And it just ruins everything because there's no real predator to keep the numbers down. And that's the problem. When you're an apex predator and nobody can control you, we have to do it. And these guys are just like, that is apex predator. They can go on land. They can walk. They can go to the store and kill you. Like, we have to take them out. We have to.
They can file for bankruptcy and still continue their businesses. These fish can do it all. Yeah, it's true. But I guess, I don't know. It's just like, just because they're tagged as invasive and they're being punished for evolving in such an impressive manner to the point of being this apex predator. They're not invasive. They're just incredibly talented at their killing mechanisms. So yeah, they can just kill everything, which is great. And now they're being killed because of their killing.
Now, you have to think, like, in Australia, invasive species, a frog is, because there's no natural predator for the frog. So,
right.
I mean, the frog is an apex predator. It's a jumpy boy, and it just jumps everywhere. But it's considered an invasive species in Australia because nothing can really take that guy out. Anacondas, or big snakes in Florida, you got, the hogs. And then rats. Rats are not, those things are just horrible. I mean, we got to kill
jumpy
them.
Boys.
That's it.
The jumpy boys. Jumpy boys. Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, it makes sense. But it also is like, I don't know, I don't feel like humans should have that much of a play.
You know what?
But, you know.
What really we should talk about is, how did they get here? I mean, they're perfectly fine where they come from. They got natural predators over there. They're perfectly fine in China. But here, obviously, they're just too powerful. They're OP. They're overpowered, man. They just can't stay here. We got to kick them out.
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, are people, like, going to this place in the river basin, the Yangtze River Basin in China, and, like, smuggling fish into Georgia?
Right?
What the heck?
Like, isn't that weird? Who does that? Why would
weird.
You do that?
If anybody's listening and knows, please send Mason an email.
What we get with number three?
Number three, we got Kurt Cobain's sweater. And it's trending because it is back on the market. It's going to be auctioned off. So it was actually auctioned off a couple years ago in 2015. And it sold for, so this is the sweater that Kurt Cobain wore during Nirvana's MTV Unplugged performance back in the day. It's like this iconic green cardigan. Never been washed. It's got stains and cigarette burns on it. And in 2015, it sold for $137,000. Which is insane. So the pre-auction estimate was actually $60,000, so more than double that. But now it's going back on the auction block on October 25th, and there's a minimum bid set for $200,000, and people think it's going to be upwards of $300,000. Yes, that's cool, and it's fun to have, but the person that had it before kept it in a safe, in tissue, in a plastic case. So it's not even, like, out there displayed. They want to keep it pristine. Is this fun to have for, like, talking points at a dinner? Or, like, is it just cool to know that you own this but not be able to look at it? I'd be walking down the street being like, yo, what's up? This is Kurt Cobain's sweater. Like, it hasn't been washed. It's still gross. Like, you don't need to keep it in the safe.
I thought about the grossness, too. I'm like, is this person trying to save the smell? And that's kind of stalkery, right? Like, does he smell it every once in a while and says, this smells like Kurt Cobain?
Smells like teen spirit. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I guess, though, if I'm thinking, like, if they were auctioning off, like, Rachel's apron from Friends, or, like, the salmon sweater that, like, Tag and Ross both have in Friends when they're trying to determine who the father of Rachel's baby is, like, some sort of iconic Friends memorabilia, I'd probably plunk down $300,000. Not that I have that money, but, you know, I would do that. And then I'd display it. But hopefully the person that gets Kurt Cobain's sweater just doesn't put it in a safe. That's just so boring. I mean, if you're going to own it and you're going to plunk down multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars, like, do something cool with it.
No, you're right. Definitely have that on display. But if I paid that amount of money, I'd wear it. Heck with it. I'm going to wear it. I want to wear it. It smells like teen spirit.
Exactly. It's still a sweater. It's, you know, it's getting chilly. It's fall time. It can be practical and cool.
What we get for number two?
We had World Mental Health Day, and that was yesterday. I knew about that. It was trending all over the place, and it's an important topic of discussion. I feel like we've talked about some mental health issues a couple times in the past on this show, and I think that's great because it's not a stigma anymore. Like, everybody struggles, everybody's fighting their own battles, and now we can talk about it. And so, yeah, that was World Mental Health Day, basically just bringing awareness to the fact that people have mental illnesses, and there's nothing wrong with that, and you can reach out, you can have conversations. Again, there's no longer any, like, negative stereotypes associated with this, I hope, and if there is, let's move past that, because that's part of the problem, is not being able to talk about it and reach out for help. And I don't know, just kind of a good reminder to just make sure that the people that you know and love around you are being taken care of, and you're making sure that everybody's all right, and you're smiling to strangers on the street, and you're asking people, you know, how they're doing, because I think that that can go a long way for somebody that might be struggling with something. But if anybody is struggling with something, you know, obviously reach out, get help, say what's up to a friend. No problem with that whatsoever.
Absolutely. I mean, there's nothing wrong. Go see a therapist every once in a while. I know I have. And it just helps you work things out, because you keep asking your mom, like, hey, mom, I think this is happening. And she's just always going to say you're right. And you don't need that echo chamber.
Yeah, that's true. You don't. Yeah, you want somebody that can kind of work you through something. I mean, therapy is great. It's also looking at Google Trends around this stuff. It kind of signifies a pretty significant change. So since 2013... mental health services near me have been on a very steady, consistent rise, and has actually reached an all-time high this past year in the United States. So there's been some peaks and valleys, but the lines are all pointing up. So that's great. People are reaching out and getting the help they need.
Yeah, absolutely. I love hearing that. What we get for number one?
We've got PG&E, which is the power company in California, and they've actually, not only are they responsible for powering the homes of millions and millions of people and businesses, but they've also caused fires in the past because of faulty power lines and the combination of that and dry weather and winds. Most famously this past year, they were responsible for starting the Camp Fire, particularly the state's largest wildfire, killed 85 people, destroyed the town of Paradise. So pretty bad. So they're trending because they're turning off power to people in the precautionary efforts to stop wildfires, because there's been some really dry weather out west. And so as of Thursday morning, 600,000 people were without power. Originally it was 800,000, but conditions have improved, so they've put some stuff up. So it's good that they're doing that. I think that that's an important measure to take to reduce risk. Obviously, wildfires every single year in California are just atrocious. There's actually, as we speak right now, there's a crazy fire going on in Los Angeles, the Saddle Ridge Fire. The cause is unknown, so I don't think that that was actually pertaining to some sort of PG&E issue. But yeah, I mean, people, I think, are pretty unhappy to not have power, but at the same time, I think it's a good risk assessment tactic that they're taking. But yeah, people were turning to Google to figure out, like, hey, am I going to be affected? Do I, like, not have power? Am I going to not have power? What's going on?
Okay, so I'm confused. I don't live in California, so this is kind of new to me. Usually when electric companies turn off power, I go get candles. Wouldn't that just make it worse? Like, so, no, honestly, so how does this help the wildfires? Like, do they use combustion, like coal or something, so they turn it off, and then now we're using water? I don't understand what's happening here.
Yes, that is true. People are using candles. Maybe that would increase the risk. But the issue was in the past that some transmission lines got broken in storms, say a tree falls on one of them in really high winds, and then that can then spark the fire. And because of the wind and the dry weather, and then the line being live and open at that point, then that actually caused the fire itself. So that is kind of the tactic. If the lines are not live and the power is not being delivered through it, say something does happen with a tree or some sort of a live wire incident, it's not going to then ignite a fire. But yeah, maybe we'll see an increase in candle-related incidences with a tactic like this.
That makes sense. Live wires. The candle stuff, I was just being a jerk, but that's what I do. When I have no power, it's like, get all the candles, kids. We're having a campfire.
Totally, which is super fun. You know, you get the candles out, gather around, you pretend like, you know, it's back in the, you know, 1700s or something. And, you know, you hang out. Maybe this will help with the mental health issues that we were talking before. People are going to take time to kind of appreciate one another, gather around the fire, gather around the candle, and say what's up.
That's beautiful. I like that. You make, lemon pie out of lemons?
Yeah, I guess that's how the saying goes.
No, it's not. It sounded good at the time.
Lemon pie out of lemons.
Is there a lemon meringue pie? There you go. what we get for the most watched YouTube video.
So it's interesting. The video is trending on YouTube, but it actually hasn't occurred yet. So what it is the INEOS 159 Challenge, and it's going to be a live stream of Kenyan long-distance runner Eliud Kipchoge and his attempt at breaking the two-hour marathon, which means running at a pace of 4:34 per mile. And that is going to take place live on YouTube, depending on where you are in the country, tomorrow morning very early. So for me, it's going to be tomorrow morning at 1:30 a.m., which is really exciting because breaking the two-hour marathon barrier is absolutely insane. Again, running 26.2 miles at a 4:34 pace boggles the mind. But some people are like a little bit pissed by this because they're like, yo, he should have to run it, or whoever, you know, breaks that barrier should have to run it in an actual competition where there's not all these variables that are being controlled for. People are saying it's like kind of gaming the system a little bit and is making sure that it's peak conditions, the wind is in the right direction, maybe the course is even like slightly downhill to be able to help people out. So, or just, sorry, just help Eliud. It's just him running. They're trying to do it. So it feels like a little bit of like a, you know, a publicity kind of marketing stunt. But regardless, it's still an incredible feat. I feel like if he does it, there's going to be a little bit of asterisks on this until somebody actually does it in a sanctioned competition. A little early in the morning for me to tune in, but I'm excited. I might give it a watch.
Like every sport event, I'm going to catch the highlights. Let's see if he can beat this record. But that is kind of weird. I was confused. I went and looked at the site where it was at, their channel, and I was like, which video is it? It was all these videos. And I ended up kind of watching a little bit of the one that said Challenge Live Preview. And I like his energy. Like, they're really into this guy. And I just like that energy in general.
That's great. I love energy. He actually did a similar challenge called the Breaking 2 Project in 2017, where he ran in Italy on the Monza racetrack, and he finished in 2 hours and 25 seconds. Damn, that is such a bum. After running for so long, you miss it by 25 seconds. I feel like he's going to get it this time around, but man, to be 25 seconds off, got to be pretty sad.
Yeah, that's wild. I mean, like 25 seconds, what was that, like a drag of your foot?
Right. I know, that's nothing, especially when it's spread out across 2 hours. 4:34? Can't even run like one lap around the track in that amount of time. It's just, guys, firing on a whole different level.
Yeah, the stamina involved for that. I have difficulty getting the groceries to the house, so, you know, I'm going to sit on my butt and watch this guy run for 2 hours. I'm going to feel like I accomplished some things.
Yeah, I know, it is kind of, I know, watching this, just sitting, stuff in my face with popcorn might make you feel kind of bad about yourself, but you know, I will feed off of his energy.
Now I'm going to buy a at-home gym now so I can watch it and feel like I'm doing something, because
that's inspiring. Yeah, maybe I'll watch it on the treadmill so I feel like I'm running right along there with it.
Oh, that is so cool. You're right. I'm going to do that.
Wow. Okay. That's good stuff.
All right, man. Well, thanks so much for joining me, Justin. I appreciate you being here.
Hey, thanks so much. Talk to you next week.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's masonverapayne.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.